We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's Tuesday, August 24th. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Gabe Goodwin. This is Jeff Schwartz of Smarter Than You. This week, we're breaking down Matt Nagy's excuses, NFL rule changes, and we will discuss if the Rose Bowl is really going to hold college football hostage. This is a great week, Gabe, because college football is back this Saturday. It's week zero. There's enough games to get us through the weekend. We have the end of the NFL preseason, and we are ready to roll with football. How are you? And more importantly, Gabe, Zach Wilson's going to the Hall of Fame, apparently.
Oh. Okay, what do you have? What, you went 8 for 9 or something against second team? Okay, great. I'm good. I want to ask you something a little off script here, Jeff.
Yes.
I'm going to sneak it into the over-under game we're going to play later, but have you done the crate challenge yet? And if so, how many... How many crates were you able to climb?
I've watched a lot of videos on that. I will not be doing the crate challenge. I will die. Like, my body will break in half. I am way too fat to be. How do people have all these crates, by the way? I'm very confused about that part of this.
That's definitely the first question you have to ask yourself. The second question is, how many of them go into it knowing, sort of like with Wipeout or Floor is Lava, like, this is gonna end badly, there's no good way out of this, and just do it anyway?
Oh, there's 100% chance that they all think they're gonna do it.
You think everyone who's been doing this crate challenge thing, and if you listen to this show, you probably pay attention to Twitter, which means you've probably seen it. If you haven't yet, go look up crate challenge on Twitter. I don't know. I think some of these people know they're gonna get hurt and just think it's worth it for the gram.
I guess, but they're doing this on concrete, man. Like, they're smashing their faces, their backs, their necks on these crates. And I feel like Matt Nagy has been doing the crate challenge when it comes to Justin Fields.
Maybe that's how he's going to pick his starting quarterback week one, is he's going to have all his quarterbacks climb the crates, and whoever comes down in one piece, that's his starter. Because that's about as logical as anything else we're hearing out of Chicago right now. Thank you for the segue. He insists that we need to see him in a regular season game. That's Andy Dalton, 11-year veteran, guy we've seen too much of in the regular season in the past. Instead of starting his superstar-in-the-making rookie quarterback, Justin Fields, who, you know, people are really excited about. He's had some ups and downs in the preseason so far, but what the hell is this other than a hot seat coach baking in an excuse so that he doesn't get fired week four? So he's got something to go to when it's not going well in Chicago. Oh, I guess now I'll start the rookie. That's got to be it, right?
This is very odd. It's the messaging. I think it's important about the words we say, right? Like the messaging of how we say things is important when we discuss what decisions are being made in life, but in football, right? So Matt Nagy said, we need to see him in the regular season. Him being Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton is going into year 11. What do you need to see in Andy Dalton in the regular season? This is winning time, right? It's winning time when week one begins. What do you have to see from Andy Dalton that's any different than his entire career has been? And my argument all along, Gabe, has been this. And Justin Fields may not be quite ready. We saw him, you know, get hit in the face the other day. I'm glad he's fine. He just didn't know his protection rules. Plain and simple, right? He learned later in the game that same blitz, he figured it out. You learn from those experiences. So we're seeing him grow each and every week. But here's my point the whole time has been this. If you're the Bears, the ceiling with Dalton is what? 9-8, 10-7. You know, you're winning, you're getting a wild card, you're going on the road, you're playing Tampa Bay, Green Bay on the road, and you're losing in the wild card round. So that provides you no future if you're Matt Nagy fighting for your job. What provides you cover is playing Justin Fields, and he gets better each and every week. If he gets, you know, it's not gonna be each week, really, honestly. It's gonna be each quarter, right? For the first quarter of the year, he plays a certain way. The second quarter, he plays better. Third quarter, he plays better. And the end of the season, he plays better. So that there's excitement building into 2022. You have to prove, in my opinion, if you're Nagy, that not only is Fields going to be good, but that he's going to be good because of you, right? Because if you can't prove that, then you're out, right? They'll find someone else to coach him. And if you play him in week 7, 8, 9, 10, when the season's already over for you because Dalton's not doing a good job, then your team morale is low. Maybe your team is injured. You're not as good as you are right now, which again is the offense has some issues on the offense line especially. But you have to play him sooner or later. This is different than every other place, right? San Francisco, okay? Jimmy G, the last time he was healthy, they went to the Super Bowl that year, right? They've won a lot of football games with Jimmy Garoppolo. I think Trey Lance will play sooner or later there. He might even play in week one. But it's been proven that Jimmy G can win when healthy. The problem is he's not really been healthy. That's why Trey Lance is there. People always point to Pat Mahomes. Great example, okay? Pat Mahomes. The Chiefs made the playoffs 3 out of 4 years with Alex Smith before that. I believe they won the division the previous 2 years to when Pat Mahomes was drafted. They won the division again that year. So there was a lot of winning happening. It made sense to keep Mahomes on the bench. And, you know, I've talked to my brother about this many times. I don't think anyone thought he'd be this good. I think there were glimpses he'd be this good, but I don't think anyone believed that. I don't know if they believe he'd be this good. I'll put it like that, right? Like, I mean, just based off of what he did in practice. They thought he had the potential, duh. Every situation is not the same. And in this situation, playing Justin Fields is smart, in my opinion. Last point before you come back to me on this. This idea of, oh, he can't play week one because they face Aaron Donald. Bunch of crap. Come on, guys. It's NFL, all right? The Bears' offense line is what it is. It's not a good offensive line. Jason Peters in the mix is going to help them. But if you go by that logic, you can't play him because Aaron Donald's playing. What about week 3 with Myles Garrett? What about when you play Tampa in week 7 or Green Bay in week 8 or any other team in the NFL has a good defensive line? You just can't play that game? This is the offensive line you have. You have to let him play. Don't worry about getting hurt. Don't worry about confidence. Look, if he is a young player who can't handle getting hit a couple times in week one and that ruins his entire season, you drafted the wrong guy. And I promise you, looking at what he did in college, he did that vicious hit to the side, right? That terrible hit to the side. That didn't do anything for him, right? He came back in and played well. So I'm not worried about his confidence. I think you play him right now.
Okay. Well, like you said, this will be different in every situation where we have a rookie battling for a starting job, and you're allowed to have a different opinion about Lance or others. But I guess what I'm most confused about is just what is this mindset of Nagy's that, like, I thought he was hired because he was a quarterback whisperer. I thought he was the guy who took, you know, Pat Mahomes to that level. Like, everything you're saying tells me the only way for him to keep his job and the only way for the Bears to succeed is to do what he supposedly has done before, not have some veteran ride you to mediocrity. Like, why would any owner or GM or anyone keep you employed for that? I don't understand any of the logic.
Yeah, it seems backwards, right? Because they didn't go into the draft with the intention of drafting Fields, right? So the intention was to play Dalton. And I mean, look, here's what happens, though. If you miss on Mitch Trubisky, it sets your franchise back years. And that was in the midst of what's happening, right? Is they trade up for Trubisky. It didn't work. They need to find someone. So they found Dalton. And look, in that vacuum, okay, Dalton makes sense, right? He'll make you respectable. You'll fight for a playoff spot. And you'll feel like your fans will feel like you have a chance to win. Because look, we know the NFL sells hope better than any league. And if you get in the dance, there's 14 teams in the dance now, you feel like you have a chance to win. Even though it's very unrealistic, right? Tampa was the first team since, I think, 2012 to not get a bye to be in the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. Like, it doesn't happen very often. But, you know, nonetheless, you get in. And Dalton can get them there. I feel like Dalton can get them to 8 or 9 wins. But now that you have Fields, you have the upside. You have that guy ready to play to make you excited for the future. It's unrealistic. I'm not a Bears fan, so I can, you know, I'm going to say it's unrealistic to expect them to win this year, right? But you want to get excited for the future. And if you can show Fields this year plays well, has his ups and downs, and the future is ready to go, then you feel great as a Bears fan. And Nagy can say, hey, look, I'm a quarterback guy. I got Fields in 1 year getting ready to win the MVP, in, let's say, in 2022, right? So I feel like that, and again, the thing about Dalton, to your point, and that's what you're trying to say, is like, if they go 6-2 for the first 8 games, does that save his job? No. Like, what saves his job is Fields being the guy. And again, him proving that I'm the reason why Fields is good. Because we know Fields is good. Now, he might play well in spite of Matt Nagy. I don't know if that's possible. But, like, he might play well in spite of an offensive design, which I don't think is going to happen. But Nagy needs to prove he's the guy. And it starts in week 1, in my opinion, of doing that.
Yeah. Let me read you something from a familiar person in your life. Your brother, Mitch, who knows Matt Nagy, obviously, from time in Kansas City, I would assume. He said, if you're not able to evaluate them after a month of camp, 3 preseason games, and another few weeks of practice, then I don't know what to tell you. This tells his team that any camp competition, in quotes, was useless, and their preconceived depth chart is what they'll stick to, not merit. Now, maybe Mitch is talking about a few different situations, but as it pertains to this, like, doesn't that make the whole we're competing, two guys are competing for a job thing total nonsense in Chicago and everywhere? Isn't that sort of just a bunch of BS that NFL teams say this time of year?
Well, we've talked about this, about what competition actually is, right? Which is often not real, right? Competition is not real. And the Bears might have put Dalton's name in pen on the depth chart to start week 1 already. And Mitch is exactly right, is that it's not a competition, probably. It might have not been a competition. We'll find out. But more importantly, Gabe, it's what the locker room knows, right? And the locker room knows who's better. And that's where you end up losing your locker room. Because I remember in 2010 now, a long time ago, Matt Moore was our quarterback in Carolina, and they forced Jimmy Clausen on us early in the season. And we knew Jimmy was not good enough to play. And Matt gave us the best chance to win. And of course, you go out, you play hard, you fight, you battle, you try to win every game, but we had no chance with Jimmy. We knew that. Everyone knew that in the building. But there was, from higher up, I drafted him. They want him to play. And this situation with Chicago, the Bears players know. Now, Dalton might be better than Fields right now. But the question is, in 2 months, will Fields be better than Dalton then, right? And that you have to play them to see that. I really do think the lack of the preseason, the games, the practice, has hurt kind of this development of young quarterbacks, right? I mean, when you had double days, when you had 4 preseason, you're able to work these guys in a little bit better and maybe make a more informed decision. Now you're just kind of throwing these guys out there and being like, hey, you know, hopefully you can play well early in your career.
Yeah, I think I would equate this decision-making to, like, if you go to a bar for dinner in a town you don't know that well, and you look at the menu and you're like, interesting, like, ceviche. Huh. Or like, pokey. That might be pretty good. That's a wasabi sauce. Well, that sounds kind of good. But then you're like, wait a minute. I'm in Phoenix. Like, I think I'm just going to have a hamburger, man. Like, Andy Dalton is that hamburger. Like, you're fine. Everyone knows a hamburger's fine. You're going to be fine with a hamburger. If you want to risk the ceviche at the bar in Phoenix, like, maybe it's great, but that could be a disaster. And I guess maybe that risk management is part of the equation here.
I was in Ruston, Louisiana, calling a Louisiana Tech North Texas football game. And I know the strength, this is 4 years ago when I called some games for stadium. And the strength coach for La Tech, is a guy that I knew. He trained me for the combine, Kurt Hester. So We got dinner the night before the game. He's like, I figured, you know, Cajun food, barbecue. He goes, dude, we have a best sushi place. I was like, in Ruston, Louisiana. And we went and ate there and it was fine. But then I drove to Shreveport to fly home after the game. And I had a fried shrimp platter at a gas station across the street from the hotel that was 1,000 times better than the sushi in Ruston, Louisiana.
I would eat fried shrimp at a gas station in Louisiana over any kind of sushi at all. No offense, people in Louisiana, but there's things you do well and things you don't. All right, a few of the things we've sort of talked about are interesting because they're thematically similar to what's going on in San Francisco. But I think this will be a slightly different conversation talking Trey Lance. So our buddy Mina Kimes tweeted this the other night. Depending on what time you logged onto this app tonight, Trey Lance is either a bust or the second coming. And she's not wrong. I saw a lot of different takes flying around. Most people's takes were the takes were on two different ends of the spectrum. So his numbers to start the game, pretty terrible. 1 of 5, 9 yards a pick, not good. Then he comes back for 3 more drives, goes 7 of 9, 2 touchdowns, suddenly looks good again. I've never really known what to make of this guy. Kyle Shanahan says he's going to decide his quarterback whenever I feel like it, in quotes. I don't really know what the question to you is, Jeff, other than can we just lower the temperature on the Trey Lance takes? I think most of us are confused.
And I did not watch much of that game yesterday, but I did see her tweet, and it was fantastic. And there was another tweet I saw from Sam Munson at Pro Football Focus who said, do we have the steal of the draft and bust certification running for preseason yet? Panay Sewell bust, Jamar Chase bust, Field steal the draft, Lance both, depending on which part of the game you watch.
Like, right. This is where we're that's at. That's another way of putting
then,
it, yeah.
And then Zach Wilson, best quarterback ever. So that's like kind of where we're
stop,
at,
stop
these guys right
that.
Now. I didn't watch much of that game yet. It's on my list of things to get back to. But I did see some highlights. You know, Lance did not play much football last season. He played one game last season, if you recall, right? There was no football at that level. They scheduled an independent game against Central Arkansas, like just to kind of get him a showcase. So he has not played a lot of football. So, and he never played a lot of football anyways, right? I think he was no more than a one-year starter, if I believe, correct.
There's very little tape on the guy.
Yeah, so he just hasn't played very much. And while I think, and I still believe, he'll be rookie of the year because this offense is very digestible for any quarterback. And you put him in there week 5, week 6, week 7, and he's ready to go. But I will say, Shanahan has been more coy about the quarterback competition stuff a lot lately compared to what he was to start the season. Where at start the season, he's like, no, he has to earn it. And now it's like, oh, he's sort of earning those reps a little bit, right? We're seeing more of him with the ones. But again, with only one preseason game left, Gabe, I don't think they're going to change quarterbacks. If there were 2 games left and he was able to play a half of the 3rd game and then a little bit of the 4th game and he kind of got that extra week of camp and pick things up, then maybe you feel more comfortable putting him in. I think he probably starts the season on the bench, but by week 4 or 5 is on the field, and he actually wins rookie of the year, like I've said. I mean, in every situation, he has the best offensive line, the best skill position players, and the best head coach and play designer, right? Out of all, in any rookie, out of Lawrence or Wilson or Jones or Field. So I think Trey Lance plays early, but I don't think he starts, Gabe. I don't.
So these decisions always sort of come down. I mean, this one's another similar one of like, are you going with ceviche or are you going with a hamburger? Jimmy G is the hamburger in this case. but I still think the conversation, it always comes back to, do we want to throw this guy out there like, what's his name, Carr? David Carr a few years ago and ruin the guy we want to be our future by getting him beat up before he's ready. And you're saying it's not necessarily that. He'd probably be okay, but Jimmy G might be a little better for a few weeks, so they actually just want to win some games. This isn't about protecting Lance for the future. They'll get to him. That's what you're telling me?
By the way, do you know that David Carr, that his first year was 2002? A long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, and we're still using him as our reference for why you don't throw.
But maybe he just wasn't good. Like, I understand the idea of getting beat up. Like, Joe Burrow last year got beat to shit. Still, we think he's going to be pretty good, right? Yeah, like, I feel like, yes, the confidence of a quarterback can vary. We've seen it with Carson Wentz, right? Where you lose confidence, you turn to a different guy. We all know that can be the case. I think with Penei Sewell right now, the rookie right tackle for the Lions, no confidence, right? And we can see how it manifests itself on the field. But with these top quarterbacks, man, like, you have to have confidence. Otherwise, you're not going to be good. And you get hit one time, you have a bad game. If you can't overcome that, like, if Lance can't overcome playing poorly at some point in the year, maybe he's just not your guy. I'm not sure Carr would have been good anywhere. I don't think he wasn't good enough.
Yeah. I like your anti-Carr family takes. I don't want to go down that path right now, but there's a long track.
I mean, he blocked me on Twitter. I really don't know why. And then his brother. And then, like, look, I am obviously a Chiefs fan. I mean, I'm less so now. I don't really care as much. I root for Andy Reid. I love Andy. But I would be realistic of, like, yeah, Lane Johnson was better than my brother in 2017. Like, I'm fine saying that. He was. You know, Carr's like, Raiders win the Super Bowl, Rivera's winning the, Gruden's winning the coach of the year, and my brother's winning player of the year. Like, how can you have a job giving out, you know, giving NFL opinions and just say crap like that? Like, your brother will still love you, man, if you're like, yeah, they're going to finish fourth in the division.
Well, all right, back to the confidence thing. I saw Trey Lance on draft night. If you have the confidence to put on those pants and walk out there, I don't think confidence is going to be that kid's issue. It's just about readiness. And he hasn't really played any football against D1 talent or any NFL talent.
Yeah, so here's the question about readiness. And I talked about a lot of this with Pat Mahomes back in 2017.
Good.
Once the season starts, the scout team quarterback, which will be Pat Mahomes, which was Pat Mahomes, or which will be Trey Lance, they don't get any reps with the ones, right? Because you don't have a lot of practice. So every rep with the ones during that week is with the starting quarterback. Maybe one or two go to a young guy if it's older quarterback just wants to rest his arm. I'm like, I've seen that happen. But for the most part, you get 8 reps a period, 4 periods a day, plus there's a 7-on-7 period. I mean, 40, 45, 50 throws. Excuse me, 50 plays, not throws even, right? Because you run the ball sometimes. And so the one has quarterbacks take all those reps. So once you get past the preseason and the mindset is, okay, we need Trey Lance to keep learning or Justin Fields to keep learning, they don't really have that opportunity. Because on scout team, they hold up a card, right? Hold up a card, okay? And they have the play on the card. And you just do the play. And even if the guy's not open, they're like, throw it there. Or, you know, he's going to make the play. Just, like, make sure he makes the play. So you're not learning blitz pickup. You're not learning your hot routes are. You're not learning how to flip a play in the run game. You're not learning, you know, what happens if this happens. That's all over. And so if you say, well, I have to wait to see how he does in practice, that's really hard to evaluate. Most of the time, I feel like the starting quarterback, Dalton or Jimmy G, just sucks so bad, you have no choice to go to the young guy. It's not that the young guy's really ready. It's the veteran has played so poorly, they're no longer capable of winning football games with him.
That's a really interesting way of putting it, that the outward facing line we hear is we have to see how he does in practice, but what that really translates to is we have to see how bad our starter is on the field. That's all that means, because none of us get to see what practice is
look, I think playing well on scout team is important. I mean, like, that is a step. Like, for offensive line, look, we're hitting each other, right? Like, even though we're running into different play, if you're playing well against the one defensive line, it's noticeable in practice. Okay. If, you know, and Pat Mahomes was doing all those good throws in practice, but you kept falling back to, it's scout team, it's not full contact, right? It's not, he's not worrying about protections. If he makes a mistake, oh well, like, you know what I mean? Scout team, like, the defense is pumped, they picked you off, or they fooled you into doing something. And so when they put him in that Week 17 game, they were surprised he played so well, I think. Because again, you haven't seen him play against the ones. And once the season starts, these guys aren't getting those reps anymore. And so there really is no concept of getting better with the little things you need to win at that position. Yes, physically, you can get better at throwing more accurately. But all the ins and outs, right? The thing I talked about with Fields and knowing the protection stuff, you ain't going to do that in practice during the regular season if you're Fields.
All right, so we've talked a lot about the quarterbacks. We're going to talk about another weirder rookie versus veteran competition in New England later in the over-under segment. But real quick, is it different for receivers? Because I see the same people on Twitter who are having takes on all these other guys are all over Ja'Marr Chase and calling him a bust because he dropped a few balls in preseason. So, I mean, I'm not asking you to say if he's a bust or not, but I'm curious, what do you learn about a receiver in this time of the year?
We have two players in Penei Sewell and Ja'Marr Chase who are struggling, who did not play last season.
Right.
And I wonder if it's as simple as that. Now, Rashawn Slater, on the other hand, didn't play last year in Northwestern. Doing fine. Gregory Rousseau, the DN on the Bills, doing fine. I mean, it's different. I just feel like Chase just knew, right? By the way, He has not played in a game with Burrow yet. I'm not saying he would magically catch the ball if Burrow was there, but he's playing with a backup quarterback still. Like, I am not worried about Penei. I'm not worried about Chase. They're going to be fine. It's the preseason. And real quick, there are some takeaways in the preseason that are worth talking about, because I feel like we have this overriding opinion now of nothing matters in the preseason. Nothing at all. I was reminded that in 2010, the Panthers, when I was at the Panthers, guess how many touchdowns we scored on offense for the entire preseason, for four games?
You wouldn't ask me if it was a real, I would say zero.
Correct. Zero touchdowns, okay? And we scored 12 points a year during the regular season. Fucking awful, okay? Like, right? So like the Arizona Cardinals the other day, offense looked horrendous with Kyler Murray. Horrendous against Kansas City. And I tweeted out, you know, Cardinals offense does nothing for me. People, it's a preseason. I'm like, yeah, they sucked last year and they played a lot against the Chiefs and they still look like they sucked. Like, some of that matters, right?
Yeah.
So while we might say, hey, you know, Zach Wilson's playing the twos, or, you know, we saw, you know, the Patriots one offense was playing the two Eagles defense essentially, and Cam Newton looked good. The offensive line looked good. Okay, yes, against the twos. They're supposed to look good. Yeah, we talk about that. But Arizona was playing the ones against the ones, right? Like, the Chiefs were playing their starters. And when there's a wholesale issue on an entire unit and they don't play well in the preseason, I think you can say, hey, man, probably not good. Probably not good. Individual players, right? Chase is dropping a ball. Be fine. Be fine. Penei Sewell, working through some stuff. I think he'll be fine. Trust those guys to be good. But entire units struggling right now. You know, we've talked a lot about Pittsburgh. Their offensive line, balling in the preseason. Great. I might be wrong about Pittsburgh. I don't think I will be, but I might be wrong about them. Like, we can take that away. Okay, offensive line playing well. Good sign for you know, the regular season. So there are things we take away from the preseason. It doesn't have to be this wholesale change stuff. But it's like Arizona looked bad last year in offense. Still look equally as shitty in offense in the preseason this year. It's a bad sign.
Yeah. Well, I can't talk you out of any of that. Here's another thing that guys like you are spotting that I would not have spotted, but I know you're kind of obsessed with this. So NFL owners approved a rule changing. There's now a ban on cut blocks, right? So this has big implications.
A ban on cut blocks 2 yards outside the tight end.
Okay, I was about to say, this is going to get pretty wonky and pretty dorky, and then you interrupted to make it dorkier. So why don't I just say, can you explain to me why guys like you are so pissed off about these new rules? And can I just say, on behalf of all fans, we like rules that keep superstars safe. We don't like superstars getting their knees sliced in half by no names.
So the first thing about cut blocking is it actually rarely results in injury. There's no data behind that. It's something that we like to talk about because once every 7 years, a guy gets his knee blown out and we're like, oh my God, cut blocking is the worst. There's no data that says cut blocking is harmful for you, especially if you do it correctly. No data about that. So the NFL owners decided we need to be safer against all data that was shown. We're not going to cut on the edge. And it goes both ways, right? If an offensive lineman's pulling out, we saw this happen this year, a corner went low to make the tackle on the guy, but he kind of fell at the feet of the lineman, boom, 15 yards. We saw the other day, lineman out on a screen. It was a great cut block. Perfect, but outside that area of where you can do it. The reason why offensive linemen are upset about it is because when we get out in space on screens, cut blocking is a great thing for us. And even if you don't get the guy down, the defender down, if my fat ass is diving at someone's legs, guess what they're going to do? They're going to move out of the way.
Yeah.
So if I miss, that guy's not making the play. All I do is throw my body. I had a coach in Kansas City, Andy Heck, who said, if you throw on a screen and you don't get the guy down, you get a plus. If you don't throw on the screen, you get a minus. It's that simple. Throw on the screen, get a plus, even if you don't get him down, or don't get a minus. Because the reason why is we're not as good as an athlete as a corner or a linebacker. And so if we try to get out in space, we take our time, we climb, right? Then we have to kind of eye the guy up and he moves the last second and we miss. But guess what? If I come and throw at that guy, I'm 6'7", man. I'm not missing. Again, I might not get him down. I was not a good cutter. But nonetheless, it was a great tool for us to have out there. I think now the screen game is going to really suffer because guys are going to have to try to just like hit moving objects that are moving much faster than we are. But then again, corners, like on toss plays, we have the advantage, right? They can't cut us now, so they can't create a big log jam, a big pile at the point of attack, and we'll have an ability to kind of push those guys down out the line of scrimmage. So it kind of goes both ways. But again, the data does not back up that there are more injuries from cup blocking than any other thing that happens on the field.
Okay. I just learned a lot, and I want to ask a few follow-up questions.
Yes.
Well, first and most obvious question is, in practical terms, if you're saying this is going to hurt offenses that have rely on the screen game or ask their linemen to get out and cut block in what I have seen the last few seasons, I'm thinking about fantasy and gambling right now, which offenses maybe lose a point or two a game on average because they can't do this thing anymore?
It's a good question, but you know, the thing I come back to is that, you know, Kansas City and New England are the best at running screens.
Yeah.
But they also have really good offensive linemen. So like, I don't know if it matters for them. Like, you know, you put Joe Tooney in space, Trey Smith, Creed Humphrey in space for the Chiefs. I mean, yeah, every now and then you might miss, but they're so detailed with their screens. It's more about, I think, for the undetailed teams, the teams that don't run screens with much detail. And I told you guys before, Andy Reid, no one better at detailing screens. And so we've seen so far in the preseason, not been a problem for Kansas City. I think it's more, Gabe, for the teams that aren't good at screens, that maybe the plays go for 7 yards, goes for two now. I think Kansas City, New England, New Orleans will be totally fine.
Okay, so then let me go to that next tier down, a team I picture throwing a lot of screens and almost using screens like the run game, at least parts of last year. What about like the Bills? I'm not sure you're willing to put them in that category with the other teams.
No, they're not as good at screens, but they have a good offensive line. I think the Bills should be fine.
Okay.
I think it's more about, again, quality of your offensive alignment sometimes than it is the technique. But dude, a good cut block is like the best. It feels so good. You just like chop that guy down.
Yeah. So any good cut block stories?
Yes.
I noticed you always like to show the big men getting upfield and pancaking people, but this is not pancaking. One.
So we are playing 2013 with the Chiefs and playing Jacksonville. And so the rule is, I could put the video up too. It's a cool video. The rule on screens is you never block a blitzer, right? So if the linebacker is coming, you don't block him. So I set out on the screen. A linebacker came. I olayed the linebacker. He fell down. I get out on the screen. Again, throw in space. That's what I'm going to do. So I tried, you know, your aiming point is the thigh. When you cut, you know, you don't aim the knee, right? You aim because you want to cut. If you cut your shoulder pad, you know, your shoulder pad hits that thigh board, they're going down, right? Going down. So I tried to hit this defensive back on his thigh. I'll give one other thing too. So when, and this is hard to do in a podcast, but when we're going like up the field, right, on a screen, and a guy's coming from inside out, right? So I'm going up the hash, and I'm on the right hash, and players are coming from left to right, right? They're coming from the field to the boundary where I'm at. It's much easier for us to cut that guy down than it is to block him, right? Because the leverage and the angles of that are just tougher to, like, you have to kind of get a space passer you would throw to block that and make sure he doesn't come across your face. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but outside in, you don't have to cut as much because A, that guy typically is stationary. You want to cut moving players.
Yeah.
That guy is a force and he's stationary. You can just kick him out, okay? So again, I'm coming up the hash, the right hash. Guy's coming from outside in. Inside out, essentially. And I go to throw on him. I hit him right in like the midsection and knock down. Boom. And I have a video of it. I wipe his ass out. It's a great block. I come back to the sideline. It was third down. Our coach is like, you missed your block. And I said, coach, I did not miss my block. And he apologized later. He's like, no, you did not. But the funny part is my brother texted me. He goes, you didn't mean to do that. And I was like, nope, I did not. I meant to hit his leg. And instead I hit his midsection. I was a terrible cutter, but dude went flying. So like I know in a podcast, it's hard to talk about kind of the offensive line technical stuff, but that's where it matters. Like if a guy's coming from the inside part of the field to the outside part of the field, he's coming across your face, man. Chop that guy down. It's hard. You have to get kind of like an extra yard now ahead of that guy to make sure he doesn't go over your face. And that's going to make the screen game different.
Okay, I'm going to throw one last question at this because I know this is where you're exceptional and other people have takes on other things we'll get to. What about tight ends? I feel like a cut block is a pretty important technique for a tight end to know and to do well because you're not catching the ball on every down. You're not even really a target in most cases. So are there tight ends who will suffer here who don't have the technique for really blocking with their hands who might have been relying on this?
So tight ends are not often part of the screen game on the edge.
Okay.
Now, they can still cut in the box, right? So when we see tight ends on inside zone more often than not, they come back across the line, right, and cut that defensive end.
Yeah.
Still allowed. But it's more out in space, which, again, I mean, look, you see sometimes with some of those fly sweep teams, right, the tight end will kind of lead block a little bit.
Yeah.
They don't cut very often. That's, again, like you can get kicked in the head. I've seen guys get knocked out. Like you don't want to get down if you don't have to. For those smaller guys, I don't think that matters for them very much. But I don't see that being an issue.
All right. Well, you know what? I have a theory now. It's possible that maybe Tim Tebow was just trying to be respectful and follow the new rules, and he just, you know, he didn't want to violate the new policies with these cut rules, so he kind of missed on a couple blocks because he just wanted to be compliant,
We have a rundown, okay, and I look at it.
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to look at over-under, so I don't. Mm. And this rundown was Tebow free, and I was very excited about that, and you have managed to bring Tebow
into the conversation naturally went there. I can't help it.
How much does he pay you to talk about him in this podcast? Do we have to pay him for that? Like, does he pay us for that? How does that work?
No, you know, and by the way, next year will be my 7-year anniversary. I missed a couple chances at him renewing my vows because of COVID. So I think next year I'm going to have to tap into that.
Is he gonna put his yarmulke on and his tallis and
We're
going
to work out something that's all faiths will be honored at renewal ceremony that led
all
by
faiths
Tim
will be honored at your wedding. Okay.
If Tim cool. Tebow's there, I'll convert. I mean, whatever it takes. all right, let's move the line. Our little over under game. We're getting closer and closer to real things to bet on. So there's some real-ish stories in this one. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with Move the Line.
Boom. And there it is. Wireless on the most reliable network nationwide.
That's cool. But with my wireless, I get unlimited for just $30.
Impressive. But does yours have 5G included?
Of course. And my wireless saves me $400 a year.
That's because you all have Xfinity Mobile with your internet. It's wireless so good, it keeps one-upping itself.
$30 per line per month, taxes and fees extra, compares pricing of top carriers, Xfinity internet required, reduced speeds after 20 gigabits of usage per line, most reliable based on RootMetrics U.S. report, results vary, not an endorsement.
All right, Jeff, we're back. Let's move the line. A couple over-unders here. I want to know, crazy theory coming your way. Don't laugh at me while I say this. Odds Bill Belichick let Cam break protocol so he could get Mac Jones more reps with the ones. He's going to miss basically a week worth of critical practice because a miscommunication is what the Patriots are saying. And now Cam can't work out with his team because he took the wrong test for COVID or something.
Oh, no. God, Belichick's never going to live any of this stuff down, is he?
He did this intentionally, I really think so. You think they really didn't understand when they told him he could leave the state for a medical procedure that the testing he was going to do wouldn't live up to the standards the league agreed to? So
Basically,
Cam was on an approved trip. The team said it was okay. He was going to go get something else checked out.
Yeah.
And so he was tested every day while he was gone, but the tests he was taking aren't the tests you're supposed to take if you're like tier one or tier two. So he's not allowed back into close contact with tier one players on the Patriots until a 5-day waiting period. He's COVID free, but
I mean,
he can't work out.
If he had been vaccinated, this is not a problem.
Well, okay, that's another conversation.
Has put into put a protocols in place for this. No, okay, so no, I don't know. I mean, it's funny to joke about that, but Belichick could have just done this anyways. I would say no, Belichick has earned these questions, man. Spygate to me, everyone was doing that. I mean, that was such a silly thing to get in trouble for, considering that the signs are visible in public. Like, you can tape them anytime you want. Like, the backlash to that is astounding to me. They're public. Like, you're signaling, baseball, they steal signs all the time. That's not a problem, but in football, public signals being stolen is a huge fucking crime all of a sudden.
Jeff, I'm not here to try to re-explain to you how for 20 years they were breaking every single rule they could and then lying about it when they got caught. So it's otherwise, not the Jets that unreasonable for sure. to think that the guy sabotaged his own starting quarterback to get to his new Brady and give the reps to Mac Jones, the guy he wants to be the starter.
I think he wants Cannon to be the starter, though. That's why this doesn't hold up, in my opinion.
I don't think he does, and I think McDaniels gave it away because he was asked about it, and he was like, I don't know, Bill will make the call on who the starter is soon. To me, it doesn't make a big difference. That's the
coordinator. Again, just you have to look at who's getting – they have, you know, all these practices are open, right? It's not like college where you don't get to see the practice.
Mm-hmm.
They're all open. Who's getting reps of the ones?
Well, this Cam. Week it's going to be Mac Jones.
Yeah, because Cam is out. So, yes, I mean, but again, I don't think this is – This is not what happened here.
All right. I don't subscribe to most of the popular conspiracy theories out there these days, but this one I'm willing to start. I think there's something going on. Let's talk about Carson Wentz. I said 2 or 3 weeks ago I was done talking about Carson Wentz forever and done talking about the Colts this season. I've already broken my promise to everyone. So I want to know over under 0.5 weeks Carson Wentz misses with injury this season. Miraculously, he says he thinks he could play week one.
Well, he was at practice today running. It took all the 7-on-7 reps. So, wow, that's quick. I was listening to a presentation, and I was a doctor was talking about what Wentz had. And if she's correct, it doesn't seem like it's a big deal as far as what he has wrong with his foot. So I was leaning toward the conservative side of the estimate, right, 5 to 12 weeks, and taking the 12. But it does feel like the 5 might be right. In such an odd time frame, right? I mean, how often are injuries 5 to 12 weeks? It's a long time frame for an injury. But if he's back at practice today, it's August 23rd. No one plays till September 12th. Like, you got 3 weeks. Like, I think he's going to play, Gabe.
Okay. And then what about Quentin Nelson? Didn't he have like almost identical injury? Isn't he a more important piece to the puzzle?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen if Q's an offensive lineman though. So that's the he's you know a little heavier, a little tougher to probably come back from.
Okay, I mean, I'm aware that he's heavier and plays a different position. I'm just apparently this injury is 5 to 12 weeks or less than that. I mean, it's all kind of random. I'm wondering. I'm trying to give people in Indianapolis hope. Maybe the real star of the team can come back too.
I hope he comes back, but he hasn't practiced yet. Seems less likely.
Okay. All right. Over under 1.5 more Rose Bowls played at 5 p.m. on New Year's Day. There's a reason I'm asking this. You can help me explain it in a second.
Yeah. So it's over for now. It's gonna be done soon. Do you want to tell the story? Or you want me to get into? Because I am.
You jump into it. You're our Pac-12 guy.
Yeah. So basically, so I love the Rose Bowl, right? My parents are Bruin alums. We have season tickets. Not we. My parents. They still have them. I've been to 50 games of the Rose Bowl, right? I went to every UCLA home game. I've only played there once. I've been to another Rose Bowl as a fan. I love the Rose Bowl, all right? I love the Big Ten, Pac-12 have that rivalry in the Rose Bowl. It's a huge deal. For anyone on the West Coast, it's a huge deal to play in a Rose Bowl. Like, growing up as a kid, it wasn't make the BCS championship. It was playing the Rose Bowl, all right? And I still think out on the West Coast, playing in a Rose Bowl is a huge freaking deal. I argue when Oregon in 2019, there was talk of Oregon being a playoff team. And look, if we had been Arizona State, we would have been, and I would have been happy with that. But it was one of those things where, like, it was an either or, right? Would you rather play in the playoff or the Rose Bowl? My contention was I'd rather play in the Rose Bowl, win the Rose Bowl, than get smashed by Joe Burrow at LSU in a playoff game. Like, it's that important of a game. I ended up being right, I think. I think that winning that game against Wisconsin was great for the program. Love it. Best venue to watch a college football game. Anyone's ever been to a Rose Bowl absolutely loves it, right? It's a great place. They've updated the facilities. I remember when I went there as a kid, there was peeing in the trough for the first time is an experience you never forget. but like I love the Rose Bowl. But Rose Bowl, get your shit together, man. So basically with a 12-team playoff, which is being talked about, which by the way, the reason for this talk about the Pac-12, Big Ten, ACC sort of collaboration, right? The alliance is it's for TV rights, okay? Because if the SEC and ESPN are kind of together and expanding the playoff, ESPN gets all those rights for those playoff games. I think these other conferences want to make sure that Fox gets a piece, CBS gets a piece, and like what's happening in the NFL, right? Where each one has a piece of the playoffs and we make more money as a group. I think they want to be included in that. But the Rose Bowl wants to be played on January 1st, okay? Mm-hmm. unless it's a playoff game or the championship game, and they'll kind of venture off those. The problem is in the new playoff system, it's not going to be that, right? So there's many ways the playoff system happens. The first round of games are played at a home team site. The second round will be neutral site, but we're going to rotate between the six big bowls, I'd imagine. And the Rose Bowl might get a January 4th semifinal game or a quarterfinal game in the Rose Bowl. They're not going to get the championship game. And I think for them, they'd rather keep the pageantry of the January 1st game. But once the playoff happens, Gabe, there's no more Pac-12 Big Ten Rose Bowl anymore. Because the top two teams in the Pac-12, the top two in the Big Ten, are playing in the playoff now. And the Rose Bowl, you're going to put a third place Pac-12 team and a third place Big Ten team in the Rose Bowl as a separate bowl game? No. And as much as I have not liked what's happening with Oklahoma and Texas, like, I don't like what they did. But this is the new norm now, Gabe, right? We have to adapt to what the new is, right? I wasn't a fan of 12-team playoff. I think eight would have been good, or six. But they want 12. This is the new way we're doing college football. And the Rose Bowl, if you want to be part of the tradition of college football still, you get your shit together, man. You're not going to get what you want anymore. And you have to accept that and be part of this new process.
Okay, well, it sounds like from new reporting, that's why we're talking about this, the folks in charge of the Rose Bowl are basically saying, hey, we want to be part of the future. We do see that the college football is changing, but we have a few traditions we'd like to see woven into that, and we'd like to be given special consideration. And so the January 1st game means a lot to them. Not just for the game, for the whole event out here. Like the Rose Bowl, the whole day is a big day. You know, like that's
the whole week, the Lawry's Beef Bowl, the parade is on the 1st. Like it's a huge deal.
It's a big deal. And so they're just saying we want to be a quarterfinal site, but we want to have sort of preferred status, and we want to make sure that we play on the 1st and we play at that time of day that we like the game to be played. And there's a good reason for that. If you've ever been in that stadium at that time of day, it's incredible, as you've already sort of mentioned.
Oh, it's
so remarkable. Do you think that this is workable, is the question. All right, what are they posturing for? What are they're setting, we want this, 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 and this, of which they will get maybe half. What really matters, do you think, to the Rose Bowl folks?
I think the time of the game matters to them. Like what time it's being played. Because you're right, the sun's setting down. It's very beautiful. To me, it's like time and exposure, right? Are they going to get the exposure they want at the time they want? Again, the Rose Parade's a big part of this. The Lawry's Beef Bowl, like the entire week of festivities. They would imagine they want to keep the week of festivities pretty closely to the same, but if it's now a quarterfinal game or semifinal game, the festivities aren't the same, right? It's just not going to be the same. And so I think to me it's about they want to have the better matchup or best matchup possible, and maybe that does include a Pac-12 and Big Ten team. Maybe there's a way to make the brackets where that game is going to be the game they might get.
Well, that part makes sense, right? Shouldn't a Pac-12 winner that's involved in a playoff play at the Rose Bowl in whatever round it's in? And shouldn't Clemson play down in...
Well, you're basically saying that, like, let's say that... How would this work? Let's say, like, the Pac-12... The Big Ten is the 4 seed, mm-hmm. So you basically have and Oregon's the 5 seed, or USC's the 5 seed. So you have that 5 seed, the winner 5-12 game would play at the Rose Bowl against the 4 Big Ten teams. Is that what you're saying, basically?
I think the way you described that is right.
Yeah. Okay. So, But what if another venue wants the Ohio State to show up? Like, I don't know if it's fair to just make the Rose Bowl the official.
But we fine, get the Big except Ten that, and except that you know. Certain regions should have some designation. And I think the folks at the Rose Bowl are being very fair and acknowledging we're not asking for Alabama. You don't need to, you don't need to send Clemson our way. That doesn't mean very much to us. But those teams are the right teams, to keep in ACC and SEC territory. That makes sense.
I think it makes sense to give them the game they closest want at the game at the time they want, at the time of day. Otherwise, again, it's not going to be January 1st anymore. Like, that's just over. And
well, but part of the reason why that works is because people have the day off. So then you can have a giant party all day long. And
agreed.
All but of that's LA not, can kind of shut down for that.
It's just not the way it's going to be.
Okay, well, we're saying goodbye to a lot of traditions in college football. This is one that's going to hurt if it goes away. And I didn't realize how much it mattered until I moved to LA and got to know people involved a little bit better. And it's a big one. It would suck.
You saw USC play there once. Just once.
Okay. You know, we're not really addressing all of the trolling that you're doing to my two very basic fandoms. I will give you this little bit of nugget. I took my son to his first Dodgers game.
I saw, and you Mets won.
The Mets won. Unfortunately, my kid, who's from New York, from L.A., is a Dodgers fan. Couldn't convince the three-year-old.
Cause he's not old enough to know who his fandom is yet.
Yeah, but he is, because we have a nanny. The nanny is a huge Dodgers fan, and she infiltrated his mind. And we got a hand-me-down of a Dodgers t-shirt, which he loves. Okay? So he became a Dodgers fan. I was like, whoa, buddy. We're Mets fans. As much as that sucks, we're Mets fans. When we were in New York, I bought him a Mets t-shirt. He was into the Mets. And then, the week of the game, I'm ready to take my son to his first Major League game. We're going to both be wearing Mets jerseys and rooting for the Mets at Dodger Stadium. We lost the t-shirt. We couldn't find the damn t-shirt, so I had to bring him to the game in his Dodgers shirt, which meant he was rooting for the Dodgers.
How did he like it?
He loved it. He mostly cared about the food.
Yes.
He did not quite understand. I mean, first of all, he's basically only ever known a life in COVID out here in L.A. He's never been around that many people.
He shouldn't know anything about baseball. I mean, it's too young for that.
He knows who the batter, the hitter, the catcher. He knows the positions. He loves the game of baseball. He was completely thrown off by the giant stadium with thousands of people. That was mind-blowing to him. And then as soon as he heard about hot dogs and ice cream, that was all he wanted. So then he got the helmet. They put nachos in the helmet now.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So he ate them out. He was like, "Can you hurry up and eat them so we can clean it and I can wear the helmet?" So I had to house the nachos so he could wear it.
I've never seen my kids eat more food than when they're at a ball game. Like they eat. Oh. We go to AAA games out here, the Charlotte Knights. My kids put down hot dog, popcorn, Dippin' Dots, cotton candy, Mike and Ike's. Like four juices. They eat the entire... We make it normally about six innings. It's about when the kids have had enough, six, seven innings.
Yeah, we made it to the... We started walking to the car right as soon as the seventh inning stretch ended.
Okay, yeah.
But we were there before the first pitch. Well, it was
So your son's already a Dodger fan. He's leaving the game early.
Yeah, exactly. He's a Mets fan because I couldn't bear to stay. The Mets are up 5-2 heading into the eighth, and I was like, I can't, if this goes the way Mets games tend to go, I don't want to be here for the collapse. But they hung on and they won the game.
They scored two more runs. They won 7-2.
Yeah, they tacked on. They looked really good. They were running the bases well. They could hit. Stroman threw a good game. It was a good game.
Too bad. I mean, their season seems to be. How do you feel about, this is, of course, if you're still listening to this podcast, you like us, so we can get into random stuff. How do you feel about the Mets owner just tweeting his frustrations?
I like it. Good for him. I mean, you know, who cares if some random guy who just joined the team doesn't like it? Like, you know, he owns the team. It's his losses if the team sucks. I think it's kind of weird to criticize your employees publicly, but then again, it's a sport built on fandom. Like that's, we all criticize them all the time. Like, why is he any different?
So 5 days ago, he tweeted, "It's hard to understand how professional hitters can be this unproductive. The best teams have a more disciplined approach to slugging and OPS numbers. That's it's basically on base plus slugging. Don't lie."
I mean, look, maybe he's been watching Ted Lasso. Maybe he went back into his files and watched Major League, and he realized if you try to make the owner into the enemy, you might, fire up your team and they might win some games.
No spoiler alert on Ted Lasso. I'm caught up for people who haven't caught up yet. But I've been waiting for Ted and Rebecca. It's going to happen at some point. I feel like we finally got our first little sign of it. Like, it's happening at some point. It just has to. The best what I saw about Ted Lasso is, like, the reason why it makes us feel good is basically because, like, a man is being nice for once, and we're just like in awe that, like, a male can be a nice character for once. Like, he's the nicest human of all time.
Yes.
So it's a great show. Oh,
it is great. So now let me use that as the segue to our last topic. I want to know the percentage chance that you enjoy White Lotus if you give it a try.
I've watched 1.5 episodes.
Oh.
I'm fine. It's slow. I'm fine with it. My wife does. I don't think she's into it at all.
Really? Your wife's not into it?
Yeah, it's not really her thing.
Okay. She's either binge watching
Bridgerton or like Dynasty, like just some random shows she likes. There's no real rhyme or reason. She likes Shameless. Like, I mean, just I know that Fiona's gone, and Emily, so it's not as the show's kind of different now, but I'll power through some White Lotus, especially for football.
You should. It's a very good show that you can sneak in between watching random football games, and you got a lot of them to watch in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, it's so happy, dude. I'm like so happy it's here. There's a meme I saw, like, basically, like, honey, I'll talk to you in 8 months. That's what I told my wife after we got back from Vegas. Which, by the way, Vegas, I went twice in like 3 weeks. I'm too old for that. But this sports book, this Stadium Swim at Circa, it's like outdoor sports book. Dude, it is awesome. Yeah. It is super cool.
It looked really, really cool. And I know you weren't there to like promote it, but man, you convinced me. I'd like to be there.
Dude, it was a ton of fun. I met Derek before, who runs the place. It was super cool to be there. I went to another EDM concert, EDC concert. It's a little much, though. It wasn't as good.
Well, I don't think you should be going to, you know, two sober EDM shows in Vegas in a month. That seems like you're getting it a little bit off.
It's a little bit much. But yeah, I'm excited for the season, and I just can't wait.
Let me ask you one thing. Yeah. Fantasy isn't usually our topic, but I've got to ask. I've got three guys I'm considering keeping, and I'm going to try to trade two of the other guys.
Okay.
All right. Now, I don't think anyone I think I'll have closed these deals by the time anyone in my league might listen to this, and let's be honest, I don't think they're listening this far into the show. So, I could keep Justin Herbert. I don't know, as a free agent. So basically, like, way towards the end of the draft, yeah. I keep Justin Herbert. And we have to start multiple quarterbacks. I could keep Justin Jefferson, similar late round. Or I could keep CeeDee Lamb. So let's consider where I keep them to be equal. Which guy do you like best?
Probably CeeDee Lamb.
Really? Because he's the last guy I want to keep.
Well, I feel like for quarterbacks, you can just get a quarterback each week. Like, there's not a, it's not as big of a deal. Jefferson, just with Cousins, what if he's out 2 weeks for COVID? Like, I just don't
count, like, on
it. And CeeDee Lamb is not going to have that issue. Even though, as we're recording this, 5 Cowboys tested positive for COVID and they went remote. As we're recording this, the news broke out. I go Lamb, I think. I think we got enticed by Jefferson. I think he's a great player, but I don't know, man. That's what I would do.
All right. Well, now you made me want to say we have to say goodbye. I got to go find out which 5 players had it. My draft's this weekend. I will be updating you on Monday's show on how I did.
It might be, there's 4 players plus 2 coaches, I believe. Yeah. So, yeah, man. So it's real. It's still a thing.
Okay, well, thanks for ending on a really high note, Jeff. We were goofing around about Ted Lasso and White Lotus 90 seconds ago, and now we're talking about more COVID.
You see how sad I got? I'm just like, we should have to do this still. It just needs to get here. All right, guys, hope you enjoyed. We'll be back later this week with some more previews, and we're getting close to the season, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. Talk to you guys in a couple of days.